Hello and welcome to the Vet Blast podcast. I am your host, Dr. Adam Christman, Chief Veterinary Officer here at Fetch DVM 360.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the podcast. We're going to get in the know with Lepto and, you know, a good review. We're chatting about leptospirosis and maybe what's new, what's out there. Also talking about cats and leptospirosis. So we got a lot to cover, and joining us is our wonderful colleague in this profession doing great work, Dr. Christopher Lee. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing great. It's so great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yes, thanks for joining us. And to the listeners, I got to tell you, he's all decked up to the nines. He's got a very handsome bow tie, suit on, beautiful tank in the background, just Picasso. Very nice. I love it. So, little information about Dr. Lee. He is a board-certified specialist in preventive medicine with over 15 years of national experience edutaining audiences on immunology, infectious diseases, and parasitology. He previously served as the medical director for a 24-hour emergency hospital and is pursuing board certification in parasitology, which is awesome. Dr. Lee serves on the NAVLE item writing committee, and he contributes as a monthly columnist for Pulse Magazine with us here at DVM 360. And he has co-authored the Heroes for Healthy Pets Infectious Disease Handbook and produces podcasts at myvetzone.com. Dr. Lee is passionate about bridging science and practice to empower veterinary teams and, of course, to protect public health. And speaking of public health, let's chat about lepto. So just a refresher, what is lepto and how is it spread?
Yeah. Leptospirosis is a gram-negative-like spirochete. And so with spirochetes, they're going to have a spiral shape, and they literally act as a drill through tissue. And that's what makes them such a dangerous pathogen. As a gram-negative-like, it means that they don't always stain consistently gram-negative, but they have gram-negative characteristics. And I know, you know, we think back like, Gram stains. And I've written a couple articles on why you should give a gram, and you should. It is important. And with gram negative, remember that they are dual layered, and that outer layer is endotoxin. And we'll probably come back to that when we talk about vaccines a bit. How's it spread? Always remember that leptospirosis, they're very little romantic bacteria. Their goal is to find a nice warm home and raise children. Right? Sounds laudable until we realize that that nice warm home is mammalian kidneys. They make children, release them into that urine, and the urine goes out into the environment. As long as it stays moist, so in the soil, ponds, puddles, what have you, it remains infectious, and to some degree, they will still replicate. So when we then either oral contamination, mucous membranes, or even abrasions on skin, they can drill through and get into our bodies. And so that's the spreading cycle that we see.
Got it. And who's at risk?
So who's at risk? Well, pretty much if you're a mammal and you're out here on planet Earth doing mammalian things, good chance that you are at risk for lepto. There's a broad number of cerevars or strain-like bacteria that can get into us. And again, they're all looking for that nice warm home to raise children.
Mm, yeah. And what about cats? Do cats get lepto?
Cats, you know, it's an interesting topic. There's a lot of specialists that were sitting back and wondering, you know, is there a subset population? Now, is it the scourge of cat kind? No, probably not. There's likely a fair amount of resistance. If you want to go out and find little mini packets of leptospirosis in great concentration, rat kidneys are the way to go. One out of three rats is probably positive for this. Large studies and data that's been collected that on average worldwide, one out of three rats is probably harboring this bacteria. So with that, yeah, I mean, certainly they're probably not, cats are probably not getting it a lot. There's some level of resistance, but we do wonder, are we missing some as well? What about that yopy population, right? That young, immunocompromised, pregnant situation, younger, older, you know, could that be with those? So for some of the older cats that maybe have an acute kidney injury, could that be? I think there's a lot of new data that should be coming out, hopefully, for that.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting. And let's talk a little bit about the vaccine. So, I hear this a lot about the vaccine that only covers a few strains. And, it's interesting because pet owners are actually doing the research about this too. So they'll say, Doc, is it worth it? So what are your thoughts on that?
Right. You get those that pushback. Well, I Googled and there's over 300 pathogenic serovars or strains out there. So is it worth vaccinating for just four? To me, even if that was the case, I would still say yes, because let's protect for what we can. But also remember that the USDA works very hard to make sure that we are providing appropriate vaccinations for likely risk. And so when we take a look at those serovars or strains, when we take a look at what is likely to potentially to infect dogs, likely to infect dogs and has a reservoir here in the United States, the four that are in the vaccines from the four major companies are the ones that we should be protecting for. Outside of the US and in other species, there are actually five-way leptos. So all of the companies have the ability to increase the number of serovars, but it's not needed at this point. So we are protecting against what we should be.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. Control the controllable, right? So I'm laughing because I get this asked a lot as we were talking before we were recording this, that obviously I'm a big dachshund dad, and you know where I'm going with this is that, vaccines are dangerous, and can you explain that? And sometimes they'll say, some breeders may say or argue, do not give your dog leptospirosis. And I know where some challenges and barriers about that, but how would you explain that to, say, the pet owners and breeders and even our colleagues when you hear that, there's that myth that the vaccine's dangerous?
Yeah. Right. And myths come from somewhere, right? Most of the time. And, the short answer is all the companies that are making the vaccine, they are very safe. They are considered core vaccines by the ACVIM consensus statement. AHA guidelines say most all dogs in North America are at risk. We should be vaccinating. So the short answer is that times have changed, vaccines have gotten better, and we should be vaccinating your pet against leptospirosis. The longer story behind that, it's nice because as we were joking about earlier too, right? We're of an older generation. I am so old that I was taught on chalkboard. And if you do not know what chalkboard is, it is a green patch on the wall, and we would use these dusty little rocks to write in it, kind of similar to cave paintings. And that was what I was taught on. So back in that time, when we were looking at those vaccines, they were very reactive. They did everything short of catch your pet on fire. Now, with the time, again, it was still innovation, and overall, they were fairly acceptable risks. If we go back even longer in time, I get accused of being this old, but I am not. When the first distemper vaccine came out in the US market, it was killing about half of the patients, and people lined up to get it. Because it's better to lose half of your dogs than all of them. So again, when you take a look from the inception of vaccines to where we are now, everything just keeps getting better and better. But back then, they were reactive. And if we go back on how vaccines were made and are made, it is a little bit of an explanation. So let's say if we're taking a little viral vaccine, we get a roller bottle. You have liquid broth in there with cells. You have nutrition going in, waste coming out. You put in the virus, they rupture the cells, and that milieu is what goes down a series of steps for filtration. When you get to that level, you take one aliquot and you put it into each vaccine. Well, when we're dealing with something like leptospirosis, that bacterium is much bigger than a virus. So you're taking on average, five, six times that volume and putting it into the vaccine. And remember too, we were talking earlier that it's a spirochete, right? It kind of looks like that little spiral pasta. And why do we love the spiral pasta? It holds the sauce. Well, that's a problem if you're a bacterium and you're holding that all that other sauce, because within that are extraneous proteins and things like bovine serum albumin or BSA, one of the most common known reactors and causes of anaphylaxis with vaccines. So at the time, compared to other vaccines, the early lepto vaccines had a high amount of extraneous proteins, including BSA. Fast forward into the early 2000s and to today, all of the companies have made huge innovations and changes with their filtration to the point that these are very, very safe vaccines. So we should feel very comfortable with giving them. With that said, there's a couple caveats. So if you're one of those where you're like, I get that little queasy feeling when I give a lepto vaccine, or, you know, the hospital I work at, we just don't do it as a core, but I want to. A couple things to keep in mind. One, this is a adjuvanted killed vaccine. Again, for dogs, it's very safe, but it can cause some soreness. Now, a lot of times what we do is we kind of extract safety. We go, okay, well, what do I do with cats, right? And cats are, we want low, below the elbow, below the knee, and that increases safety. But cats is a completely different situation, right? We have feline injection site sarcoma. That's FISS, not CISS. So in dogs, that's not the issue. So with dogs, the lower you go, you'll actually get more soreness and more issues. So go high. Go higher up into that meaty part. I put my lepto vaccines into the scruff. That's going to maximize that comfort for the pet. The other thing to remember with this is cold chain deviance. These vaccines are high risk for cold chain deviance. Now, what does that mean? That means that all in the pet world, our vaccine should be remaining between 35 and 46 degrees Fahrenheit. If it deviates out of that, we risk cold chain break, which means that we can lose both safety and efficacy with those vaccines, especially if it's too cold. Freezing is bad. And this comes back to why it's important to remember this is a gram-negative-like bacterium. What happens to a cell when it freezes? It ruptures. So now you have not only that internal goo, but you have endotoxin just floating in that vaccine, and that's very reactive. So if you're giving vaccines and you're like, yeah, but this is still a little bit more than a normal vaccine with reactions or soreness, make sure you're checking your temperature. And anybody unpacking the vaccines, they should be flipping all those boxes. You have one frozen vaccine, everything in that box needs to go back. And we see that in Southern California a lot in the summer, because yeah, Sometimes those are overly ice packed.
Dr. Lee, that is huge. It just hit me too when I had an inventory manager when I was working full time in my practice, and she said, these just don't look right. And they were the lepto, and it just happened to be the lepto for these particular situation. And we remember hearing that as well. And we sent it back to the manufacturer because we just, to your point, we worry, you get concerned about possible adverse vaccine reactions, efficacy. So yeah, that's a really great point. So thank you for bringing that up. So really interesting. Okay, so we talk about vaccines and leptospirosis. Let's chat a little bit about the prevalence of lepto. What do we know about the prevalence?
Yeah. You know, this is one of the most common questions that I get asked when speaking on lepto. And, you know, a lot of times I'll ask the audience, like, how often do you test? And it as time goes on, I'm getting a lot more people saying, oh, fairly regularly to weekly to daily. But I still get a lot of people that go, oh, well, we don't test because we don't see it here. It's like, well, if you don't test, you probably wouldn't see it. But it becomes an issue of, because we've been kind of trained that maybe we're not in a lepto area and we're not testing. And then we go, well, maybe I should rethink this, right? We've all thought that. And if you're listening to this podcast, you probably thought, gosh, maybe let me look it up. And if you look at any of the prevalence data, you're like, well, I don't know. Should I be vaccinating? The problem is that we make up that data. Additionally, in veterinary medicine, we virtually don't have prevalence data. When you take a look at a lot of the prevalence maps, there is not true prevalence data within that. For example, CAPC maps, which are some of the most amazing things out there. I love that tool. It is just amazing. However, to know that from, again, my specialty is a lot of biostatistics, there is no true prevalence or incidence data within that prevalence map. And what it is, it's more of test positivity. So it's what is being sent and what's the percentage of there. So it's they're good data, but we don't have the prevalence. The key of the vaccines is really then, well, you know, should we or should we not? How do I know? And if there was a dog that had zero risk of contracting lepto, should you vaccinate? No. Right. If you have zero risk of any disease, right, you should not be vaccinating, because what's the worst thing that can happen with vaccinations? Death. Right. So if there's no risk, why would you do that? Even though that risk is very small. Right. I get my flu shot every year. I realize that there's that small chance of death every time. It's very low. And thus I go get my shots. But when a client tries to explain to me that, you know, my pet does not have any risk for lepto, I actually start to get really concerned about the pet. Yeah. You know, what kind of life are we having? You know, in my view of it, I want dogs to be exposed to lepto, because that means that they're living full, happy dog lives. If you're not at risk for lepto, you're not going to dog parks, daycare, hiking, beaches, and your backyard is so sterile that squirrels do not want to walk upon it. That sounds horrible. That is a horrible dog life, right? We want to be calling Doggy Amnesty International. Like, right, what's going on? So we want dogs to be living that full life. And luckily, we have wonderful vaccines to help protect them. So in short, we should be vaccinating this as a core vaccine, and we need to be doing a lot more testing.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's talk about the testing, because, you know, we have them come into our hospitals. We will say possible lepto suspect, you know, we'll wear our PPE just in case. So how do you best diagnose lepto?
Yeah. So I always want to preface this that I'm a preventive medicine specialist, not an internal medicine specialist. So from here on out, my answer is more from a veterinarian that does a lot of ER work and has done a lot of diagnosis of lepto. When I was the medical director of the emergency hospital, it was a 12,000 square foot, 24-hour hospital. Before I was at the hospital, they were diagnosing 1 to 2 lepto cases a year. Once I was there, we were diagnosing 1 to 2 a month, and it was just from testing. So it is there. Where I was practicing was Southern California, kind of a lower middle social economic, chaparral deserty suburban area. So again, very typical to what a lot of other people are practicing with, and merely through increasing testing. I'll quickly review the tests, and then kind of focus a little bit on point of care. The three tests that are there, you have MAT testing, which are going to be blood, often paired samples over time that look at different antibody levels to the different serovars. Won't necessarily tell you what serovar it is consistently, but it does help you make that diagnosis and is considered the gold standard. PCR, or nucleic acid amplification tests, these are going to be blood or urine. Always submit both. The nice thing about this is that it looks for genetic material of the organism. If you get a positive blood, it's kind of like a diagnostic lotto win. It's a lot easier to say that this is a confirmatory case if you have the clinical signs and other blood work to match. The urine, if you have a positive, you do need to treat the animal. You do need to then vaccinate the pet, but it does not tell you that whether or not the signs are from leptospirosis, or maybe this was a reservoir case who happens to have other clinical signs. And finally, there's point of care tests. There's IgM and IgG point of care tests that are available from a couple different companies. My call to action today from this podcast would be two things. One, if you have not already downloaded and read the ACVM consensus statement on lepto, please do. And two, please start doing point of care tests. That is what has kind of changed, been a game changer for me. One of the things is when you read the ACVM consensus statement, what you'll realize is that the clinical signs are very wide and sometimes mild. When you take a look at the blood changes, they're very wide and potentially mild. Remember, I was taught on cave drawings, right? When we look back then, it was, you had the case presentation was a hunting dog in a rural state, in a rural area, liver, kidney values through the roof, dog has a couple paws into the grave. What could this be? And you're like, oh, I'll pass this test, lepto. That's not to say to ignore those, but if that's all you're looking for, you're going to be missing the vast majority of your lepto cases. What I do is I put the lepto test on the front end of my estimate. If this is an animal that's coming in for ADR or for vomiting or anorexia or fever, all of these, that is probably going to be on the estimate. It's part of nearly my minimum database. And that's how we get those cases. You know, I'm kind of considered the lepto king at the ER, and it's a very easy crown to obtain. It takes no real thought pattern because we're putting it on the front end. And those point of care tests are probably costing about $12. So most hospitals charge $40 to $70. They just, even in the area that we have with the lower social economic status, it is readily obtained. And I would say that even being the lepto king, whenever, you know, my technician asks, so do you think it's lepto? I always try to give like a little smile going, maybe. Because I've only once been right. I've only once called it. You know, at one point, the blind pig got an acorn. But most of the time, it's not. And the signs and the clinical changes on the clinical pathologic changes on blood work can be so mild. They can be something as simple as a mild neutrophilia and a mild alk phos. That's enough with clinical signs and other tests to say this is either a suspected or confirmatory case. So run those tests. So again, download the ACVM consensus statement on it, read it. It's a wonderful review on it. Print out those charts. Use this vaccine as core. Vaccinate high up. Make sure your temperatures are all within the right range, and test. I'll leave it with a quick story. I was giving a talk and one of the people came up and she goes, Dr. Lee, I hate you. I was like listening to your last talk, and I go back and I'm in day practice and I'm running all these lepto tests and they're all negative, and my staff and the other doctors think I'm crazy. What do I do? I said, why do you feel bad? She goes, well, I just feel like I'm wasting people's money. I just feel guilty about this now. Do you feel guilty when you get negative FELV, FIV, heartworm, right. Lyme? No. I was like, well, what's the one difference with lepto? Zoonotic, right? Okay. Lean into those negatives. At the ER that I'm at, we sometimes see 50, 60 cases a day that are all sick. So our numbers are going to be very high. I will easily run through a box of lepto point of care tests every shift.
Wow.
And most of them are negative. And what happens with a negative test? Well, we've protected the public. We've helped ensure that the pet does not have it, or at least it's lower on our differentials. We've increased awareness. And gosh, we've made some money. It is an absolute win across the board. Yeah. So run the tests, lean into those negatives.
Absolutely. Great pieces of advice. And it's good medicine, of course. So excellent. Thank you for sharing that. Well, this has been fantastic, Doc. Where can we learn more about you? Do you have any places where we can follow you or anything like that?
Well, hopefully more with DVM 360 would be my thoughts. And also my website is mybetzone.com. And the podcasts are available there, iTunes, Spotify, and Podbean.
Excellent. Yes, we're going to be seeing you quite a bit this year with us at DVM 360. So we're happy to be collaborating with you and having you share your expertise with our audiences and the profession. So thank you for all the great work you do. And thank you for being on the show.
Oh, thanks for having me. It was so great seeing you.
Absolutely. Likewise, my friend. And thanks for tuning in to our listeners. Don't forget to rate the podcast as we continue to grow this year. And we'll see you next time right here on the Vet Blast podcast. Take care, everybody.
Thank you for for listening to the Vet Blast podcast with me, Dr. Adam Christman. Tune in next time. Remember, take care of your animals and always stay pawsome.